Last week we went into depth about the way we criticize. It was quite interesting. I thought it was quite a fascinating thing. The best way to criticize somebody, because as we know, this is Moshe Rabbeinu's long speech, and a lot of it is that what we call in Hebrew the teichacha, the rebuke, which Moshe Rabbeinu gives the Jewish people just before he passes away. So his last long speech, and in it he's telling them a lot of the things where they've done wrong, obviously with the intention that they should be able to learn from their mistakes, not make the same mistakes. Also because they're about to enter the land of Israel, to be able to enter in an elevated way with dealing with whatever they did in the past and being able to come into Eretz Yisrael strengthened and with incredible lessons and incredible guidance. So this is really, as we mentioned last week, and we went through the first Rashi, and we saw how Rashi, it was not just the first, it was a few Rashis on all the names of the places of the first Pasuk, and we saw how Moshe Rabbeinu was just alluding to all the different criticisms. He wasn't saying it directly so as not to embarrass everybody, not to insult people, to keep the dignity, as we said, the honor of the people. That was one of the big prerequisites. As we said, if you want to, if you need to criticize somebody, you must ensure that you keep their dignity and you never, ever make them feel less than when you're giving it. Otherwise, there's no point. We had many, many other lessons. And today we're going to see other beautiful insights into what that pasuk means when it tells us all the names of the places that the Jewish people spent in the desert. Okay, so, but before we go into that, just one small thing I want to clarify, because again, as we said, this is still a little bit all part of that big introduction of Chumash Devarim. So, thank you, Sylvia. I can see you now. That's good. So we mentioned that this is the fifth Chumash. And we did mention this idea that the first four Chumashim are in a certain way one section, and the fifth Chumash, Chumash Devarim, has in a certain sense its own status, and we said it has a name, it's called Mishneh Torah. Good morning. In Mishneh Torah, Mishneh Torah means, literally the translation is a repetition, because it's a review. But it also has a little bit of a different status in that it is an in-between Chumash, almost in between, between the four Chumashim and the prophets. We said a little bit, and I just want to just re-emphasize again what that means. So the commentaries tell us that one of the words that are used is Moshe mi pi'atz mayamar. Moshe said it almost from himself. We have in Chumash Devarim where it says, V'nasati esev, that I will give grass. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't give the grass. Hashem gives the grass. Hashem makes it rain. Or Hashem, V'nasati matar, I give the rain. But why does Moshe Rabbeinu say it like almost as if it's him? So this is where we see a very big difference between this Chumash and the previous Chumashim. So the language, as we said, is used that this Chumash is called from himself, but he does it from himself. But we have a fascinating thing. What does that mean? So obviously, all of the five Chumashim are definitely all directly the word of Hashem, right? Because that's why they're called our Chumashim. They're the written Torah, and they have a tremendous holiness. And every word is so treated with such holiness. As we know, you can't erase it, you can't throw it in the garbage, and it's just beyond, and every word has infinite lessons. Chumash Devarim does have that as well, but what's the difference? So one way to look at it, there's many different angles of how we can explain it. One of the ways that it's explained is that all the four Chumashim, when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, the imagery we would use is, he was like a microphone almost, where Hashem's word just projected straight through him. It didn't become part of him at all. He was just like literally, if you want to say, almost just a machine, like, I don't know, nothing. Like, he was not even there, and it just went through him. That says, Shechina, does say, Shechina medaberes miteich kreinai. The Shechina spoke through the mouth of Moshe. In Chumash Devarim, it is still the Shechina speaking through the mouth of Moshe. The difference is that Moshe did understand it first. He did internalize it. It became part of him, and then he gave it over. So it's not less in a certain way, it's more. Because here we have a combination, and not that we need, because as Yidden we go directly to God, but we have the added benefit of having Moshe Rabbeinu insert his incredible uniqueness into the teaching of the Torah. And one of the reasons that that was done is because this is the way, good morning, the way we prepare them for going into the land of Israel, where they will be dealing with the more physical realm. And therefore, again, it becomes more part of a physical human being, where it makes Torah, in that sense, the object is that we know that Torah is something that we can all relate to. Torah is not something which is above and beyond and remains on some sphere, I don't know where, but it's something that we can all take, we can all internalize, we can all live with in our day-to-day life. And that's one of the ways it's explained. Okay, just an important thing to understand about Chumash Devarim. But the other thing that we didn't get into, and I'm going to do, I know you have it in front of you, so what we're going to do is, I'm not going to be reading so much inside, but I'll just use it to follow the text on the share here. And you have two booklets in front of you. So one of the booklets is the Chumash, and the other one is the commentaries. I mean, there's four booklets, because I didn't staple them, but there's two piles. So the commentaries, you can see, I just want to go into one or two, to one of the, to just explain again, as we say, what is this Chumash about? And then we're going to come into something so beautiful. Scrolling here. I just want to show you also. What we're going to look at is the page that starts on the top, the Ramban. And this one, I'll tell you orally. I'll just read you one or two lines. Again, we did do this one. I want to just quickly recap, because the Ramban gives us a good general introduction. What is this Chumash going to hold? What are we going to find as we're going through? So before the Ramban, I just want to share something interesting, because this is very different to what we're used to, because it's a speech. So what happens is it's very wordy. So a lot of the things that we're going to learn in Mirtz Hashem in the next while are beautiful, beautiful psukim and depths into the psukim, like beautiful verses that teach us tremendous lessons, more than, if you want to say, stories that we've experienced, that we've had in the other chumashim. Although Moshe Rabbeinu does mention many of the stories, but nevertheless, they're stories that have already happened. They're not stories in real time, as we saw in the other chumashim. But the Ramban says like this. He says, what's the point of this Chumash? What does this Chumash contain? What is, like, his general introduction? He says, as we said, it's called Mishneh Torah. And over here, Moshe Rabbeinu is explaining to the generation that is going to go into the land many of the mitzvahs that, I'll show you which one it is. It's the one that has, you see, that it says Ramban on top? Yeah, Riva, which one do you have here? These practices. Yeah, so there should be... Oh, you don't have the other booklets?
No.
No. Oh, okay, so of us. It's okay, here, yeah. Oh, here we go, no problem. Here, Sylvia, no, because there's two and... Yeah, two. Sorry.
It's in the box, it's all good.
Yeah, so that's... Yeah, so it's there, anyways, but there you go. And you're sorry about that. You have it. Okay, beautiful. Everybody else has. It's okay, it's good. It's good. There's two particles. Sorry, everybody. Here we go. Okay. All right. So we have like this. So this one, and the top it says, right, so the Ramban, as we said, he tells us like this. He says, this is going for the Jews who will go into the land of Israel. And that, so it looks like this. This is the Ramban on top. And he says, it's not a one fascinating thing that we don't find. And this is interesting, because he's repeating a lot of the mitzvahs. Remember, it's the end of the 40 years. They received the Torah. We also have to put in perspective. They received the Torah 40 years ago. So now we're about to enter the land of Israel. And as we know, even for us, if somebody gives us instruction a long time ago, we need review. We need it. Otherwise, we won't remember. We won't remember the details. We won't know how to apply it. And especially if we were taught something that we couldn't apply, well, then when it comes time to apply it, obviously then we need to hear it properly. And some of these mitzvahs, the Ramban tells us, even though Moshe Rabbeinu himself was told by God, he didn't actually share it with the Jewish people until now. And why was that? Because he knew they wouldn't be able to do it. What was the point? The mitzvahs that have to do with the land of Israel. They weren't going in yet. Now they're going in. Now it's time. So that's why a lot of these mitzvahs have to do with mitzvahs. But one fascinating thing you find, and even though these things will apply a lot in the land of Israel, are the mitzvahs that are directed to the Kohanim. You know, the Kohanim and the Levim had very specific mitzvahs, and a lot of them had to do with the things that they did in the Mishkan. in the tabernacle, and the hope is that when they enter the land of Israel, they will be building this, the Beis HaMikdash. So there will be so many of these mitzvahs will really become very applicable. And yet you don't find repetition for those mitzvahs. And why is that? So the Ramban says, interestingly, because the Kaihanim were people who were so scrupulous in their keeping of the mitzvahs, and they had such a fear of heaven, that to them, what they had learned remained with them. They didn't need that extra layer of Moshe Rabbeinu teaching it again. So anything that he had taught them, that was good enough. He knew that they learned it well and that they would pass it on generation to generation properly, which is quite a fascinating thing. And then the Ramban says like this, I just want to read you the last few lines, because we know besides for the mitzvahs, he also does tell them off and give them a lot of musr. And he says, what's the idea? Why should you do that? Because in the musr, what is Moshe telling them? And this is very important. In all the stories, you know, the golden calf and the meraglim and all the times that they complained, one incredible message comes through. And we might have done this, but I feel bad. I just want to repeat this one thing because it's actually beautiful. So on the first column of the Ramban towards the bottom, we'll read where it says, "V'terem shiyaschil bebir ha-Torah," before he begins the explanation of the Torah, "Hischil la'chicham," right, he begins to rebuke them, "U'lahaskir lahem avay neseyim," and to mention and to tell them about all the different mistakes, all the sins that they did. "Kama yamruhu bamidbar," how many times they rebelled against Hashem in the desert. "V'kama hisnahi gimoem HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'midas harachamim," and despite all the times that they upset Hashem, how Hashem was so compassionate to them over and over and over again in the desert. V'zeh l'haydiya, what's the point? L'haydiya chasodav imahem, to tell them about how much Hashem loves them, how kind Hashem is to them. And what else? V'ayid, sheyechichu b'dvarav shelo yachzeru l'kalkalam. Another reason that he's rebuking them is that they shouldn't make the same mistakes again. Pen yisfu b'chol chataschem, that they shouldn't increase and add and do again in all of their sins. Also, and this is a very important thing, v'lechazek libam, to strengthen their hearts. B'haydiya, to let them know. How does he strengthen them, their hearts? By letting them know. Ki b'midas rachamim, yisnahig imahem la'aylam. It's not just that Hashem was kind. You know, sometimes as a parent, or even as a friend, if somebody makes, like somebody does something to us many times over, we get to the point where we can't take it anymore, right? And we say to them, you know, you've done the same mistake so many times, I've pointed it out so many times, I've had enough. And a lot of times the message is, one more time and that's it, you know, finished. We can't take it, it's over. Here it's exactly the opposite, a fascinating message. Here it's not one more time and it's over. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them, you've made these mistakes and you keep making these mistakes. And you know what? I know you're humans. And I know that you're not perfect. And I know you will continue to make the mistakes. And you know that about yourself as well. So you can be petrified about going into the land of Israel. So he says to them, Shelo yoymer adam, that a person shouldn't say, we cannot inherit the land, because there's no person that will not sin. And what we will think is that as soon as we sin, well, Hashem will use his harsh judgment and we'll be finished. We'll be exiled from the land. So Moshe Rabbeinu is letting them know that Hashem is full of compassion, ki haslicha v'hamechila mimenu, right, he forgives, and therefore, not only does he forgive, but the forgiveness is a siyua ve'ezer livnei adam b'avidasai. This is helps us, it assists us in serving Hashem. Ki in yish amra kasav, ki imcha haslicha l'man tivari. Okay, now I just want to continue, because I know some of this we've done, so very, very quickly, I want to go to, if we go on that same page for 1 second. There's one part that's bracketed on the bottom, and it says Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael, right? Vayikra Moshe El Kol Yisrael, because as we mentioned, this is an important thing. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the entire nation. As we said, Rashi said, so that one person shouldn't say to the other, he said this to you and you didn't answer back. You know, why didn't you answer back? But also, the Ramban says, a very, very important thing that happens here. We need it. This was so important that all the Jewish people were there, and he says, why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is giving over some of the mitzvahs which he hadn't yet told them, mitzvahs which apply in the land of Israel that they hadn't yet been taught. So therefore, just like at Matan Torah, at Har Sinai, every Jew had to be there, the same way here. Every Jew has to be there to receive the Torah. And this is what happened here. And this is part of why Moshe Rabbeinu gathered the entire nation. Okay, I want to go now and look at the next page. Now, this one we'll do more orally, but if you want to turn the page, you'll see the next page is Abarbanel. And we mentioned this, and just very quickly, the Abarbanel tells us something, because it's important for us to understand the insight into this. Sometimes, you know, we have questions. I mean, we always have questions. That's what we are. People always have questions. And we think sometimes that our questions are perhaps inappropriate. Sometimes we think. Sometimes we think that our questions are not addressed in the Torah, because especially in the Chumash, when you look into the Chumash, a lot of it seems to be very like direct teaching, what you should do, what you don't do, or the stories that they experienced. But what seems to be missing is a lot of philosophy, right? You don't have a lot, if you want to learn about Hashgacha Pratis, right, divine providence, or Bechira, the concept that we have free choice, most people don't open up a Chumash to try and find the teachings there. Well, because you don't really see it very, very clearly. But the Abarbanel tells us something very profound. And he says the truth is, I mean, Baruch Hashem, we have many, many writings and many teachings from the sages throughout the generations, which elaborate and help us understand things in a clear way. However, they are all sourced in the Torah, and all of them find some source in the written Torah, in the Chumashim. And he says something absolutely beautiful. He says that in the first four Chumashim, we were given, you know, the mitzvahs and we had our experiences. What happened was, now they're about to enter the land of Israel. And Moshe Rabbeinu notices and he sees that many of the people are wondering about many different things, that the same things that we wonder about, they wondered about then. Why good people sometimes suffer? Why is it that mitzvahs, it seems to be that the Torah says if you do good, you know, you have certain rewards, but it doesn't look that way. It doesn't always seem so obvious. Is there a concept of reward and punishment that does fit into the Torah? Is there all of these different, is there, as we said, is there divine providence, and to what extent? Does a person have free choice? How much? How much are we controlled by our environment? How much are we compelled by the way we're born? All of these questions, all these issues, all these different things that a lot of times we think of, and we think of them in different ways. Sometimes we don't even realize that that's what we're thinking about. Like, you know, sometimes we wake up in the morning and, for example, if we're not feeling so 100%, or if our lives are complicated and things are difficult, then we think we just can't, today's a day that we just can't deal with whatever it may be. We can't do this mitzvah, or we're not able to be so, you know, what's the word? We won't be able to control our responses very well today, right? So in that sense, what we don't realize what we're saying, I'm overly exaggerating, but still we are saying that we are being compelled. That means what we are saying is that our circumstances have removed our free choice. That's what we're saying when we say that. If a person excuses themselves because they've lost their temper, and why did I lose my temper? Because I woke up with a headache. Well, it's true you woke up with a headache, and it did make it more difficult. That's true. Not saying. But do you have free choice? You have free choice. Does it mean that you put yourself in difficult situations? No. But if you were in that situation, you still had the choice how to react. So Moshe Rabbeinu, the Abarbanel says, in this Chumash, addresses many of those questions. And that's what we do find a lot in Chumash Devarim. And what he does is he weaves into the Psukim many of these lessons. First of all, to show them, as we said before, how Hashem was with them throughout the desert. That you see throughout. No matter where they were, in which situation, and also, it's not just where physically, even spiritually, even when they were making the mistakes that they were making, Hashem was ready to forgive, Hashem was ready to guide, Hashem was ready to allow them to do tshuva. And then we have also beautiful psukim later on in the Chumash, Re'ei Anoichi Noisen Lefneichem, look, behold, I will put before you life and death, right, and choose life, choose good, right? The idea of free choice, all these different things. Bacharta, Bachayim. There are many. There are the mitzvahs of benching. Isn't Chumash Devarim, we'll see. The idea of gratitude, even Bikurim comes in. So all of these things about noticing Hashem in our life, all these things will come through. And that's what the Rabbi Arbanel says, that's really the main emphasis of this Chumash. So it's just a slightly different slant on it, and it's quite magnificent and beautiful, and hopefully we'll be able to learn a lot of those lessons. So today, what we're going to start, if you go to the next booklet, this I'll show you which one. Before we get to the next booklet, I'm just looking if I have it in here. I wanted to show you, let me just see, one. Just on the third page of this booklet, I won't do inside again, the next one we'll do inside to get to, I'll show you something nice. Look, the Aruch Chaim says something very interesting on the third page of your booklet. If you want to see, he says something interesting, he says, I'm just want to see which two lessons I want to do. Okay, so first of all, Eile HaDvarim. The Chumash starts, Eile, these are the words, or these are the matters that Moshe Rabbeinu teaches. We have a very interesting principle in the Chumash, that there's two ways that we sometimes start, funnily enough, this is not grammatically correct in English. You know, in English you say you cannot begin a sentence with and, right? That's not allowed. But in Hebrew we do Ve'eile, right? You have sometimes, and these are. And we know in the Chumash, if it ever does that, it means that we are connecting what came before to what comes after. In other words, if you say ve'ele, that means that the Torah wants to emphasize that this is directly flowing from what comes before. Our Chumash, if you look how it begins, it says eile hadvarim, these are the things, which means that we are actually making a little bit of a disconnect. There is a bit of a disconnect. And this is what I told you before, because this Chumash is different to the other Chumashim. A, in the way Moshe Rabbeinu gave it over to us, and even in the style and the whole emphasis of what this Chumash is. So it's an important that you already see it from the first letter, that it doesn't say Ve'ela, it starts with Eila. Now the word Eila, the Gematria, and interestingly, is 36. Aleph, Lamed, Hey, 35 plus 1 is 36. Take the word itself, makes 37. That's how many days Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to the Jewish people from Rosh Chodesh Shvat till Zayin Adar when he passed away. So even in the first word of the Chumash, you already see how long the speech will be. I don't know if they knew that. They knew that they were standing for 36 days listening to Moshe, 37 days. Anyways, we already see. The other fascinating thing, and this is at the end, he says something very beautiful. He says that El Kol Yisrael, he says, not only, we mention now, every Jew, Moshe Rabbeinu gathered, but the Aruch Chaim says in the last paragraph, not only the Jews who lived at that time, but just like we believe, we were all there at Har Sinai, every neshama of every Jew that lived till the end of time, in the same way we were all there by Moshe Rabbeinu's last speech. What's the point of that? What's the idea? Because as we just said now, a lot of this is, and we'll see it, we'll do some, we're not going to do all of it, you know, we're going to pick and choose, because it's a bit, like, whatever, it's very detailed and wordy, but some of it is very heavy. As we said, Moshe Rabbeinu rebukes the Jewish people, even in Parshas Devarim, this week's Parshas Ve'eschanan, he begins with, you know, that I davened to Hashem to be able to go into the land, and you know why I couldn't go in? Because of you guys, you know, like, it's heavy. It's very heavy. A lot of it is quite harsh and quite heavy. But we were there, and we can take it. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. We were there for both, for the rebuke and the encouragement as well. Because in our lives, sometimes we feel we're being rebuked. That's how it is. Even in our personal lives, it looks like things are quite, you know, sometimes we go through stages. Things are not going the way they should, whether it be within our own families, within whatever, in Jewish history. Now, it's just hard. It's harsh, right? And you feel like another patch, another patch, another patch. That's what it feels like. And yet you have to realize that's what the Ramban said right away. And that's what the Aruch Chaim says. We were there. And the idea is that together with the patch, Hashem is there with us. And that's what we have to remember. We must remember that Hashem is here with us now as well, in the same way. And it's hard for us to see it, and we want Him to reveal His kindness in an open way, and that's what we're waiting for. But we have to know that He's here. We have to be encouraged. We have to feel strong. That's something extremely important. Even last Parshas Devarim ended. I don't know if you saw last week, it was like talking to us, Mamish, as if it could be talking to us in Sydney. Don't be afraid. Like, that was the last words. And we needed that. We still need it. We need it so much. It's so crazy now. I mean, what happened yesterday is just beyond. So don't be afraid. We have to strengthen ourselves. And that's why we have to keep on rereading and relearning, because this Chumash is being as if said to us right now. That's what it is. Mamish, as if it's being said right this minute to us. Okay, just to go on, and I want to show you something else. Okay, the other one has Russia. Okay, just one. As I said, I want to get to the Kliyakar. Okay, that's, if you look at your booklet, so now, like I said, I didn't staple it, but the next one, this one that looks like that. Okay, here, this one. I want to show you something inside here. We'll skim some of the words here. Beautiful, beautiful. This one. Okay, Kliyakar. So he says like this. The Kliyakar says, as we read in the Pasuk, do you remember we read that? It's two book. So it's maybe it's near you. Riva, this should be near you.
Next
to you, two booklets.
So here it is.
Beautiful. Yes. Sorry. It's my fault.
No,
I couldn't find the staples. Not all good. All good. Yes.
Why she's not here today?
She's
Hannah said that a message. Yeah, she sent apologies, which yeah, I didn't know after. Find out after. I wanted to show you that. I'm just going to show you that. Remember, we read in the pasuk Eila Dvarim. Asher Diber Meishel Kol Yisrael Be'ever HaYardin Ba'Midbar Ba'Rava Mulsuf, and then we said Bein Paran U'Bein Teufel. Bein Paran U'Bein Teufel meant between Paran and Teufel and Lavan. Now the truth is, as we explained last week according to Rashi, Teufel and Lavan are not places, and yet still we say between. And what's the idea? So Rashi gave us different sins that they did, like the Mon that they complained about, that was like Lavan, like white. But the Kliyakar will explain it slightly differently, and he will tell us when you use the word bein, sometimes like between, sometimes it's a place, sometimes it's time. And he says this is alluding to time, between this time and this time. Which time and which time is Paran and Teufel? And let's see. And so I said it could have been written for us now, Hashgacha Pratis. I'll show you something beautiful. So he says like this. Loshen bein ubein makim iti lahaisif shein is yadi. So it's a place, and he says, what does it mean? Between ma beini beini bein shiva asur b'tamuz l'tishavav. The first pasuk in Chumash Devarim is telling us about a time that we experience every year between the 17th day in the month of Tamuz and Tishavav, and we know what they're called. Those are called the 3 weeks, and they have another name in halacha. They're called Bein Hamitzarim, between the boundaries, that's what they refer to, which is in a sense between the negative experiences that we had, between the constraints, that's what it was. And he says like this, how do you see it? Because Paran, what happened in Paran? Paran, it was the place in the desert that the Jewish people did the sin of the spies. That was the Meraglim. And when did they do that sin? Tisha B'Av, that's when they cried. Hashem said, you cried for nothing. Why will I give you what to cry? Well, we've cried enough over the generations. Hashem gave us what to cry about. That was Paran, right? He says, Ma'isa Meraglim, Asher Boi Bochai B'Chia Shel Chinam, right? Then we cried a cry for nothing. V'Hukva B'Chia L'Dairis, and Hashem established it to be a cry for generations. B'Lel Tisha B'Av, on the night of Tisha B'Av. And what is Teufel? Teufel, he says, refers to the Egel, refers to the golden calf. Why? What's the connection between Teufel and the golden calf? So the word Teufel in Hebrew, he says, I'll show you, he says an interesting thing, and it means something which is, let me just see, Maisa Egel Remez B'Teufel, Ki Matzinu Loshen Zeh Ba'Avayda Zara, Bekam Mekaymes. We find this language used by idol worship. It's actually interesting, tiflus, it means nonsense, something which has no substance, and that's what idol worship is. Something which, instead of God, we replace it with something insubstantial, and that's what Teufel is. So he says that one is, even though it's going the opposite way around, but still, between the time when they did the golden calf, which was Shiva Surga Tamuz, that's when they sinned with the golden calf, the 17th day of Tammuz. And then, till the time of Tisha B'Av was when they did the Chet HaMeraglim, the spies. And now, throughout history, we also have these days. And every year, we re-experience them. We know what happened on the 17th of Tammuz, besides for the golden calf. That's the day that they broke the walls of Yerushalayim, right? That's why the 3 weeks begin. That's when they actually, the siege was really broken, and that's when they came in to kill us, to destroy us. Absolutely to destroy us. That's what they did then. They broke any semblance of security that we had. That was finished. It was the end. That was really, as we know, that only took 3 weeks, and then they actually burned the Beis HaMikdash from them. And many, many, many Jews lost their lives in those 3 weeks, as well as they were taken, tortured, and then taken into exile. That was the time when they were really exiled totally. So this is fascinating how the Pasuk already hints to it. But I want to show you something, what he says about this. What's the lesson? Okay. So he says something absolutely amazing. What does it mean for us? He says, so we know that they did these sins, and we obviously should learn from them. But what does it mean for me and you in our daily life? So I want to show you the paragraph that begins, Ki Bederech HaTeva. I don't know if you see it. It is, it's a bit small, the words here. It's the third paragraph, Ki Bederech HaTeva. Because naturally, Ein Hatzolam Epnei Akas Oyev Ki Im Be'echad Mishnei Drachim. The truth is, he says, naturally, there really isn't a way to save ourselves from our enemies, naturally, as we know. If we look around in the world, the amount of enemies that we have, and the way they don't even need anything. They don't have to have any substance. They don't have to have anything. Never mind, they don't have to. But they turn everything so inside out, backwards, for like such lies that are just so hard for us to accept, to even live with. Even that makes you so angry. And he says, but how could we? So what's the only way that we have that protects us from our enemies? So he says two things. He says, Hey mitzad hashkochas Hashem yisbarach. The only way is when Hashem takes care of it. Only miraculously, so to speak, when Hashem steps in and supervises. Or he says, and he says, who does he save? L'chol hadveikim bay, all of those who cleave to him, in other words, all those who feel connected to him, afim einon atzumim b'teva, even if they're not strong naturally, mikol mokem kishen mekaimim v'ahavtes Hashem aleikecha, but when they keep that they love Hashem their God, hagoyrim hadveikus b'Hashem yizbarach, which causes us to cleave and to be connected to Hashem, us who matzil l'chol hadveikim b'y, so he saves those who cleave to him. Now, of course, this is not to say that Hashem saves everybody who behaves, and the ones who are suffering are not being good. That's not what we're saying at all. We know that's not the way it works. That's definitely not the way it works in Golos. Things are so unclear and muddled in everything. But generally speaking, we're talking about as a nation. Okay, so personally, people suffer. We don't know why. We can never explain that. But as a nation, how do we have the strength? Where does our strength come from? Our strength only comes from if we associate, if we consider ourselves, if we continuously are aware that we are totally dependent on Hashem and that our whole existence is miraculous. That's the only way. That's one thing. But there's one more component, he says. And then he says, hey, and that's one. And then the other thing is, hey, mitzad hateva, in a more natural way, he says, kishein mekaimin v'ahavta l'reacha kameicha. So on the one hand, we said we have to do, and this one is even harder, that we have to love Hashem. The second one is we have to love each other. Why? What's the point of that? What does that help? So he says, Oz ish esrei einu ya'azeiru. Because we know when we love each other, we're there for each other. We help each other. And there is no strength unless you're unified. It's the only way. We're so small and we're so weak as it is. If at least we are look out for each other, well, that gives us some measure of success, in a sense, against our enemies. It's the only way. So he shows us something beautiful. So you need to have both the love for each other and the love for Hashem. And that's the only way to hopefully, not hopefully, but for sure, to be able to, for us to survive despite all odds against us, because all odds are against us. We are always and we have always been the smallest nation, a nation that for some reason, again, we don't know why, this is what Hashem has made it, that they don't like us, we do nothing and already they don't like us. So there is this constant. So two things we have to make sure is to be united with each other and of course to have the love of Hashem. And he says that's very interesting, that at the time when you look, he says, U'b'shnei, he says, at least I have some hope. Ubishnei zmanim elu avdu Yisrael shneim ke'echad. At these two times, they lost both. What does that mean, he says? And therefore, they had nobody to run to help them, because on Shivasar B'Tammuz, when they made the Egel, what did they do when they made the golden calf? They turned away from Hashem, right? That was, like we say, serving idols. That means Hashem is not the one they're looking to help them. They're looking to idols or to all the, whatever, I won't give any details of what we look for. All the different Baba Mises that we think is going to come and help us, and then when they don't, we get upset. Yeah, that's Shivasar B'Tammuz. And he says, a fascinating thing, that the month of Tammuz, what is the mazel of the month of Tammuz? It's called a sartan. A sartan is, in English they say, cancer. It's a crab. Do you know how a crab moves? Apparently a crab moves sideways or backwards. It doesn't move very, very fast at all, but doesn't really move, doesn't crawl in a normal way, apparently. Doesn't move. It moves a bit like, more to the side, but here he says, almost like backwards. And what's the idea? He says, because so that's the same way the Jewish people, what they did in the month of Tammuz is, we were moving away from what we should have been moving towards. We should have been coming closer to Hashem. And instead, we move away from Hashem. We move backwards from what's really there to help us, to things that are that are unable to help us. That's what we do. We look for assistance. We look for aid. We look for security in things that cannot provide the security. That's the golden calf. That's the month of Tammuz. That's the 17th day in the month of Tammuz, specifically the beginning of the 3 weeks. And then we come to Tisha B'Av. And what happens on Tisha B'Av? Hayu Maisa HaMeraglim. That was when the spies. And what happened then? He says, that's the day that the hatred was born, the hatred for each other, unfortunately. The fact that we don't like each other enough, that was born. Because how do we see sinas chinam there? This is a very fascinating thing. Because what happened that night when they were crying, or the night before, or whatever, they were crying in their tents. And Rashi, in Chumash Devarim, tells us, in the story of the spies, when you look into the story, when it actually happened in Parsha Shlach, over there it tells us that the Jewish people were screaming and shouting and saying, you know, Hashem took us out of Egypt, and where is He taking us? To a land that we have no capability of conquering, which means we're doomed, right? That's what they were saying. We can't go into Israel. They're much too strong. The nations are much too strong. There's no way for us to overcome and to win these wars. But in Chumash Devarim, there's another dimension which is added, and that's something that's not so well known. There's another thing that happened to the Jewish people when they went home that night that they were complaining about. And what did they say? They said something quite incredible. They said, not only are the nations very, very strong, which in a way, that has logic, that's a rational fear. Because it's true, the nations are strong. There were seven nations divided, 31 tribes over there, very strong ones in the land of Israel. And these were people who were not used to fighting. It was impossible. I mean, we see it, it's difficult. It's very, very difficult to go to war. And they had a right to be afraid. But when they went back to their tent, they started to complain about something which actually was irrational. And what was that? So they said something interesting. They said, you know what? Hashem hates us. We love Him, and He hates us. That's what they said. Interesting. What does it mean? Why do they say Hashem hates us? He took us out of Egypt, and He's giving us the land of Israel. What's the problem? Egypt is a land which we know is irrigated by the Nile. So it's a land which has no worries, doesn't have to worry about the weather, never has to worry if there's going to be rain or not rain, because it always has the Nile which can irrigate the land and things will grow. Whereas, as we know, the land of Israel is a country which is dependent very much on rain. And we know that even till today, sometimes, unfortunately, there are many, many years that we stand and we realize we need rain in Israel, right? And things are not going to grow. So it's a country which is dependent upon the rain. And the Jewish people said, even though we love Hashem, He hates us back, because look what He's doing. He's taking us from such a fertile land, which is only dependent on the Nile, and He's giving us the worst land, the land that is worst of the two, that dependent on the rain. What was the problem? So the truth is, if you take one step deeper, you see something interesting. The Nile, it's true, it does irrigate the land. But when people are dependent on the Nile, what do they have to do? As we know, you know, you learn about it, people, with the agriculture in Egypt, I don't know now, but they used to build canals and the water would run, you know, flow from the Nile in order to bring the water to where you need it all over in all the fields. If there is a place which is a little bit higher, you know, upper, so to speak, how do you do it? So the person has to work very hard. They have to schlep the water. You know, you even if you build those canals, you have to ensure that the water will go to the higher areas. In other words, it's not like you stay in bed and the fields get irrigated. There's a lot of hard work involved. In Eretz Yisrael, if you follow, as we know what it said in B'chukai Zayi, Im b'chukai say teleichu, Hashem promised the Jewish people, if you follow, if you go in my ways, what will I do? V'nasati gishmeichem be'itam. I will give you the rain at the right time. And the imagery that's used is Hashem says to us, and that's when Mashiach will come, it will be this way. You will lay in bed, and while you're laying in bed, Hashem will be irrigating your land. He will make everything grow. You don't even have to go out and lift your finger. But you have to do the right thing. Obviously, you have to serve him. You have to do, you know, the right. You have to act the right way. So here we see something very interesting that the Jewish people were crying about in their tents, which was exactly the opposite of what Hashem had promised them. Obviously, why do they think Hashem that they said we love Hashem and He hates us? Because in there, that which was obviously totally the opposite of what was, Hashem loved them, and that's why He took them out of Egypt and wanted to give them the land of Israel, which is the best land of all. So we see over here something very interesting, a fascinating thing. When, and we all know this unfortunately, when we have this feeling of resentment against Hashem, it goes together with a feeling of resentment against each other. And when we have a feeling of hatred against each other, we sometimes redirect it instead of, because it's a bit embarrassing, we say, I don't mind the other person, but it's all God's fault, you know? It's this kind of a hatred that becomes part of them. And this is what happened on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was a time where we divided our hearts, so to speak, from where it should be directed to both love Hashem and love another Jew. And instead, there was the seeds of disunity that were already sprouting there. That's what happened on Tisha B'Av, he says. I'll show you, he says, Teva ha'inyin mechayiv zeh shekol echad yisne es chaveirei. Everybody will hate their friend, he says. V'tar v'tzarezu v'telad mida ra'azu asher echriva ba'yis rishon v'sheini. And we, so he says, so it's an interesting thing. So he says, and this is, and we know, this is what caused the destruction, especially of the second Beis HaMikdash, but even of the first Beis HaMikdash. People are not aware. What do we mean? Because in the first Beis HaMikdash, where was the hatred directed? People didn't like the leaders. They said, it's all the leaders' fault. You know, the prophets, they don't care about us. They don't have our good intention at heart. Or they're corrupt, you know, the judges. So there was a lot of disunity between the Jewish people and their leaders. In the second Beis HaMikdash, it was disunity between just the Jewish people as a whole. Each person, one man, then his friend, so to speak. And we know that's what happened at the end. The famous story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, right? Where they invited the wrong person and then he shamed him. And that's what brought about the whole destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and the whole exile into Rome. So the Kli Yoker says, this is Bein Teufel V'Lavan, I mean Bein Paran V'Teufel V'Lavan, between Shivasar B'Tammuz, between us first rejecting Hashem and then rejecting each other, we didn't stand a chance. Now we have nothing to rely on. Now we're totally vulnerable. And then what happens? Everything gets destroyed, everything implodes, and we get, unfortunately, we're removed from Eretz Yisrael and we go into our long exile. But with all the harshness, it's terrible. So the Kli Yoker ends off and he says something interesting, that what we have to do, why was Moshe Rabbeinu telling us this? What was the point? He says, because obviously he's trying to tell us that if we want to, it's up to us to choose to do tshuva on this, to reconnect back to Hashem, connect back to each other, and realize that the strength that we have is only when we're united and only when we rely on Hashem. This is what we have to concentrate on. That's the first pasuk, as we see in Chumash Devarim, already telling us, so to speak, in a way, it's already telling us why things go wrong, but more importantly is how we can fix it and how we can ensure, perhaps and hope, that things will go right, not go wrong. And that's the idea here. Let me just see. And just one last thing. It's an interesting thing. He says there was 11 days. Fascinating. It says in the Pasuk afterwards, it says it took 11 days to go from Har Sinai, and it was an 11-day journey from Har Sinai to almost the entrance of the land of Israel. And yet they did it in 3 days, and then they ended up 40 years in the desert, right? What's the concept of 11 days? So if you look at the Jewish calendar, he says that in total there are 11 days that we actually mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So he says like this, there are the 9 days that we have, right? So we have 9 days. And then he says, we also have Asara B'Teves, the 10th day of Teves that we fast. That's when they first started the siege around Jerusalem. And Shiv Asar B'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, which is not part of the 9 days. That's the first day of the 3 weeks. So those are the 9, because the 9 days are much heavier mourning than the rest of the 3 weeks, as we know. So there are 9 mourning days plus Shiv Asar B'Tammuz plus Asar B'Teves, 11 days. Again, already hinted in the second Pasuk in Chumash Devarim. 11 days was the journey from Har Sinai till Eretz Yisrael. What that could represent for us is that now that we've already had those 11 days over and over, many years over, that Hashem should help, that we should already be able to enter the land. We should enter the land peacefully. That's what we mean. We're there. We have it. We need peace. We need to be able to live there in a peaceful way, in a secure way. That's what we need. And that's, Emirat Hashem, what Hashem will do for us. That's what we're waiting for, as we say. That's exactly what we're davening for and what we are waiting for. This is amazing how it all worked out like this, but I just want to show you one small thing, and then really we're going to continue with this next week. And we'll stop here. But the Aruch Chaim, the next Aruch Chaim, he tells us something on a whole different way. Now we're talking going back to just regular life. He says that these places that are mentioned are actually hints, not hints, I mean, after the word is hints, but they are guidance to how we are meant to live our life if we want to be able to learn Torah and to be just, to be good Jews, if you want to say, to be good people. And I'll just share one, just to end off with one. So he says, the word that's used is Ba'arava. Where did they find themselves? In the plains, right? In the plains of Moav. Well, the word Arava, he says, interesting word, comes from, he says, Arava is, let me just see, Shatiyah HaNava, what have I done? I'm not sure if I think I've skipped a page here. So sorry, because I want to see this inside. Just to share one nice thought. Okay. I'm not sure if, I'm sorry, maybe I did it the other wrong way, I stapled it, that's why. The wrong way. But I'll just share with you orally. He says the first thing that we have to do, it's a very cute one, he says, the first thing we have to remember is that we have to strengthen ourselves. Sorry, I'll see the first one here. He says that we have to learn from Avram Avinu. Why do you have to learn? Where does Avram Avinu come in? He says, because it says the word is B'midbar Ba'arava. And what is Arava? He says, Midase Shel Avraham, La'Avram Ha'Ivri. You know, Avram is called Avraham Ha'Ivri. Really, it meant that he was Avram who was from across. Yeah, you know, that's where he came from. He traveled from his place. He was Avraham Ha'Ivri. He had to transfer himself from one place and then came into the land of Israel. And for us, what that means is, and this ties into now, we have to inculcate in ourselves the Midah of Avraham. And we all know what the Midah of Avraham is, Chesed, kindness. The first thing that a person has to do before they can even start learning Torah, before they can even start doing mitzvahs, is to make sure that they model themselves on Avraham. Chesed, kindness. But what was the chesed of Avraham? And we know how Avraham lived his life. Avraham lived his life where he accepted everybody. That's how he lived. We know his tent had the four, you know, the thing we learn in kindergarten. But what does that represent? The four doors of his tent. It meant that Avraham was able to see the good and the advantage and the uniqueness of every person. And whichever direction they were coming from, we're talking not just geographically, obviously, whichever direction, he was ready to accept them. And they were welcome in his home. This is a very, and they felt welcome. And this is something extremely important for us, especially when we're talking about Torah, because Torah does give us a certain perspective, and it gives us the truth. Now, the truth is an amazing thing, but there's a problem with truth. Because what's the problem with truth? Because truth can be a little bit intolerant. That's the nature of truth. Because something which is not true, obviously, contradicts truth. So if a person is living a life of truth, it can lead to a person becoming intolerant. What the Aruch Hayim is saying is not that we bend our truth. No, that's not what Torah tells us. Torah is true. And we live 100% by what Torah says. But we have the ability, and this is the uniqueness of Torah, to combine something which seems contradictory. That we can live with an absolute truth and know what's right and what's wrong, and yet still be able to have four doors open and allow everybody in and feel welcome. It doesn't mean that we accept their way of life, that that's the way we're going to live. No, that's not what it means. And it doesn't even mean that we tell them that they're doing the right thing. But they feel accepted in their essence, in their being. We accept them for who they are, for every Jew as a neshama. And it doesn't matter what they're doing or how they're doing or where they come from, what their background is. And of course, we know for sure what that means is anybody who's different than us, when it doesn't come to things that really matter, definitely that we're open to being accepting, and not only accepting, but even to learning. There we have to learn from them. You know, as we say, sometimes it's hard. It's very hard when different people have different personalities and it doesn't gel with us. It just doesn't, right? It's hard. I mean, I just think of a dumb example. Like, you know, you have somebody, let's just say you're a person who's very, very organized and very meticulous with time. And the other person is just all over the place and never comes on time. So it's difficult, right? It's difficult to include them. You know they're always going to be late. You know they're always going to be everywhere. They're disorganized. But obviously, chesed means that you're able to incorporate and to accept and to value that person. Doesn't matter that that's the way it is, that they're different than you and it's difficult for you. So that's the first thing. But Mirtz Hashem, what we're going to do next week is we're going to go through these beautiful lessons that the Aruch Hayim tells us. Humility and all different things that we have to have in order to shore me back. Sure.
What month did Yosef's brother?
Ooh, I should know that.